Okay, let's get started. Thank you for being here. First thing, any questions left over from Tuesday's class? Any new questions that you might have? Who's here from out of town? Everybody's local? Okay. Berkeley. You know, I have to ask a question, too. If you missed Tuesday's lecture and you're a student, please pick up the handout materials. And since the first lecture was a mandatory lecture, please review the information on the course website. Review the audio and slides, and write up a 1 to 2 page summary, including your thoughts. And email it to me when you have a chance. And if when I get it, you'll be credited with attending that class. And it's very important for every student to sign in on the pink sheet every day, and equally important to grab a cookie, okay? So please do that. If you haven't done it now, you can do it toward the end. And if you were here on Tuesday but didn't sign the sheet, you know, please see me afterwards. Okay. Professor Nelson asked me thought it might be a good idea if I explain a little bit more about a couple people I mentioned on Tuesday. Gordon Bell is the individual that's wearing the sense cam that I talked about on Tuesday that automatically takes photos as he moves around every day. He has a website and a book called My Life Bits, as in computer bits, information bits. He was one of the principals at Microsoft, and very interesting guy. Dean Kamen, I also mentioned. If you're not aware of him, he's an engineer extraordinaire. He has a company back in New Hampshire, and one of the things he built was the iBot wheelchair, which I showed on Tuesday. And he developed that into the Segway, which he's riding here. And he has a lot of sets of jeans and blue jeans shirts. You won't see him wearing anything different, ever. He's been here a couple times on campus. He also has a company, DECA, that's making the full prosthetic arm that I showed you on Tuesday as well, called the Luke arm, okay? So today is pitch day, where people who have suggested projects get to pitch them to the class, and the whole point of doing a pitch rather than a presentation is that it's very short, and the idea for the presenters is to do their best to interest you in their topic so that you will choose them as your project to work on. And this is for students who are working on team projects, taking the course for three credits. Students who are working on individual projects will make an appointment with me to decide on the project. So that's two different kinds of projects. So the agenda today is introduction of some people, overview of room 36, some considerations that you should use in deciding how to form a team, and what project to choose. And we'll get into the bunch of project pitches. And then I hope to leave as much time at the end for you to talk individually with the people that are presenting so that you can ask them specific questions and get more information on their projects. So please stick around for that at the end. Okay. So there are these people are people that are associated with the course that have volunteered to help students on their projects, and they come from a variety of backgrounds. Debbie Kenny, who you'll see on Tuesday, is an occupational therapist. Doug Schwant is a Stanford grad and mechanical engineer and consultant. Sakti teaches a course in medical device design, and he also has a background in prosthetics. Mark Felling is not local. He is available over the internet. He's a quadriplegic individual who has his own company, and he said he's going to be out of town, out of the country. So he's very active, and he is an engineer as well. So another resource for you to call upon. Gary Burke is in the audience over here. You can talk to him afterwards. He is a prosthetist, and he's been associated with Stanford for many years. And these are people that, you know, you can email and call out of the blue, and they have years and years of experience that you can call on. You can should consider them a part of your team. And as I mentioned last week, I'm also a part of every team, so you're not working alone. Right now, we're going to start with Marlo, and she's going to explain it all about what room 36 is. Hopefully I've embarrassed her quite a bit with these pictures.
Just
a little bit. But they're all you know, so you shouldn't be ashamed.
That's true.
Wait, I got that mic.
Manager of Room 36, which is part of the Product Realization Lab on campus. It's a place where any student at Stanford can come and make something. So Room 36 is sort of a subset. It's for lighter prototyping. And if you're in a group that's going to be making a physical project for this course, it's a really great resource for you. We have a lot of materials. We have coaching staff there that's sort of outside of this course. So just independent, you know, ideas and motivation and people that you can talk to. So we have a lot of cool physical tools. We have a laser cutter for making things out of sheet materials, 3D printer, electronics. So if you're making something that maybe has some robotic components, that's something that you can get coaching and have components for doing that. We have sewing machines, a lot of hand tools, so you can start with really simple, rough material. As I mentioned, it is sort of lighter prototyping, so the stiffest, hardest thing that we use there is wood. So it's really really geared towards really easy access, and if you don't have any experience at all, that's fine. It's a great place to start because the tools that we have are chosen and the materials that we have there are chosen to be accessible for anybody to learn how to use comfortably. And I think the most important, materials and tools, those things are all great, but coaches is the most important part. People that are there to give you motivation, specific skills, teach you how to use tools safely and, the correct way. Whenever the lab is open, there's always a TA, a teaching assistant there to help give you ideas and show you how to use things. So we're located over in the Wong Engineering Center. So nominally, it's diagonally this way across campus. It's one of the new engineering buildings. We're in the basement level of that building. I'm sure these slides will be available to you so that you can get more information if you need it. This is sort of the meat of how you get started there. We have a website called WebShop, which you can sign up on. We have a very short safety orientation that you take, just to give you basically a tour and show you what sort of risks are there. It is a very safe place to work, but we just want everyone to be aware of sort of a consistent set of rules and guidelines for working there. There is a lab fee. One quarter is $40, or two quarters, so through the end of the year, $70. For that lab fee, there's a lot of materials available for your use. There are sort of endless tools, cutting knives, things like that. And if you have any questions, you feel free to email me. I'm pretty responsive to email, so if you want to just talk about your project, I'm there a lot. The teaching staff there is also fantastic. So that's a basic blurb, but once you get into your projects, maybe in a couple weeks, I'm not sure exactly what the timeline is, but feel free to stop by and make some physical products.
You should also mention that they also support electronics work as well. So if you have a project that needs to use a microcontroller, that's available, and help is available there for those kinds of things as well. So, and in addition, the course will pay your $40 fee for students working on projects. So please let me know if that's going to be you. Okay. So talk a little bit about projects again. Team projects are, teams are of no more than 3 members. And last time I looked on the sign on Access, there was 12 students who were taking the course for 3 units. So that's great. So that's, you know, 4 teams of 3. But you need to sort of get together and figure out, you know, what, you know, who's your team and what kind of project you want to pick. Please do that by the end of next Friday to form a team and select a project. And the first, your first task, other than informing me of this, is to provide names. What is your team name? What is your project name? What is your device's name? So you can use a little bit of creativity to come up with names. For those working on individual projects, the first thing you'll do is contact me, and we'll meet and discuss various project options. And you'll be, you know, interviewing a person with a disability and doing one of these three things: researching a topic that would benefit them, working on a paper design of an assistive technology project, and take it as far as you can. Or for people whose background isn't engineering, maybe they'd like to use, you know, some of their, you know, the background that they do have, and so that'd be sort of like creating a work of art. You know, if there were music majors in here, or if you want to do a video or a sculpture or a poem or something like that related to a person with a disability. So we'll decide on those things. So how do you form a team and select a project? There's 6 things that I've brought up. Well, obviously, every team member should have a desire to work on the same project. You have to be sort of flexible. I mean, if you really, you know, want to work on something and nobody else does, you know, it's okay to work in a project of 1 or 2. It doesn't have to be 3. But it'd be good for you to, you know, sort of have the same, you know, goals for desire for working on the same project. It would also be good if all the team members were either graduates or undergraduates, and because that makes it easier to move the project into something in the spring quarter. And it's not necessary, but it's probably a good idea. And for people who want to continue their project into the spring quarter, either as independent study or in ME113, you know, you should move, you know, your project into those classes as a team. So that's a consideration. This is very important. Match the skill set with the project needs. You know, if you don't have a background in programming and the project requires some programming, this course is probably not the best place to develop those skills. So you know what you can do, and you'll have to find out what your team members can do, and then you can all work together. Now, there's a lot of students in here who may not be engineers, and I think it would be great synergy for having different people on the team, not all engineers. I think that would be really neat, so I encourage you to give that a shot. Personality, there should be a good mix of compatible personalities. Now, you know, problems with team members, you know, do come up from time to time, not necessarily in this class, but in other classes, but you can't determine that beforehand, so I'm not sure, you know, how you can determine that, you know, today. But I should mention that if any problem does come up, you know, please let me know as soon as you can, and I'll do my best to, you know, remedy it. This is very important. What other courses are you taking? Are there other project courses? I know that courses like ME218 and 310 are very time demanding, so I would discourage anybody from taking a team project in this course and in another large project course. So you should ask other people that are going to be on your team, you know, if that's the case with them, because it's really unfair to other team members if you're working on a project in another class and can't spend any time in a project in this class. It just doesn't work. So, you know, please, you know, keep that in mind. And, you know, if you are working, taking these other classes, it may be a better option for you take a 1-unit individual project option in the class. Okay, so that's something you should consider. So now we get to the pitches. There's lots of them today, so I think this is the most we've had in a while. But we'll try to go through them very fast so there's time at the end for everybody to talk and mingle. And all these projects are written up in the handout, so you can follow them in there, but also listen to what the pitch person is saying and keep track of what projects that you like so that later on you can send me your top three projects. Okay, any questions on this? There's several projects that are not being pitched, but they're still viable projects. So I suggest you read about them and let me know if any of those sound interesting as well. In addition, there's some projects at this website, software projects, that you should look at as well. Okay, so first on deck, on board, is Greg Brown from Raft. And I'll turn the mic over to you.
Okay. Well, I come from Resource Area for Teaching, or RAFT, and we make hands-on science and math learning materials. I'm proud to say I graduated from the product design program here at Stanford many years ago, before you were born, but the lessons I learned there live on. This product I'm going to demonstrate for you is a RAFT activity to teach sound. It's called the Glovophone because it uses a rubber glove and a tube. And if I blow into the end, you can hypothesize what you think is going to happen. So if you were a fifth grader, would you rather learn about sound by reading about it or by making a glovophone? Probably you'd rather make a glovophone. And then the obvious question is, what if I make it longer? What if I make it bigger around, etc.? Well, the only way to find out what will happen is to actually do that. And that's inquiry-based learning. That's what we're all about. Our products come in little bags like this, and they sell for a few dollars. This is an entire classroom set of this. This is not that activity, but another RAFT activity. An entire set for $2. We use recycled materials, and we use a lot of volunteers to put this stuff together. So that's what it's all about. We serve 1 million children a year with these activities. And for a lot of the children, it's the only science and math training they get. A lot of RAFT members serve disabled children. And so we're always looking for ideas that will help kids with disabilities. Last year, we had a team. They developed a very simple concept, foam dice. Okay, giant foam dice to help kids with visual difficulties and eye-hand coordination and all other problems you can imagine to be able to use many of our activities which involve dice. Again, this year we have access to all the same teachers and their students who will help you with your design. We have an in-house mentor who can help you at RAFT. There's a RAFT location in San Jose and one here in Redwood City. We're wide open. We're just looking for exciting new products that you think would really help teach kids science and math in a hands-on way and that are particularly suited for kids with disabilities. The project from last year, it was something I was able to describe to Martha Cantor as the Undersecretary of Education. We demonstrated at the Maker Faire. It led to a student internship, and so it was a big hit. This year, we have all those same benefits, plus I have video cameras for everybody that participates, because what we'd like to do is have you document what you do for your RAFT project. So I have 1 million other things to show you, which I'll have in the back, and I hope you'll come and talk to me. Remember RAFT.
Okay, thanks, Greg. And will you be able to provide contacts to teachers?
Yes. Yes.
Take your
mic. If you're hit by the arrow, you have to be on the team.
Thanks. Very good. Okay, next on board. What do I do with the pointer? Next is Tansy Brook from NeuroSky. And let me give you the microphone.
Thank you.
And put that on someplace.
That will actually work. All right, hopefully that works.
All right. Hi, my name is Tansy Brook. I work for a company called NeuroSky. We have a technology that's actually based on a medical technology called EEG. Some of you may be familiar with it, electroencephalography. Traditionally, this technology is used in a hospital environment to do things like detect seizures or see what type of brain activity people have. But what we've done is re-engineered the technology from the ground up to be cost-effective and user-friendly, because up until this point, it was extremely expensive, and so it was only available to hospitals or for labs. So what we've done is we've created a headset. We've simplified the technology, so rather than having a multi-channel system, which is typical for the medical systems, we have a single sensor that rests on the forehead, and then we have a ground and a reference that clip onto your ear that help you filter out all the electrical noise that comes from overhead lights and power outlets and things like that. So one of the things that's exciting about this technology is that there's a couple different types of data that you can use. And we work a lot with independent developers and with researchers and people who just have creative ideas for the technology. And what you can do is there's three types of data. The first one is the algorithms that we've created. And those are patterns of brain waves that are consistent across all audiences. So when somebody concentrates, we know what that looks like, and we can make it impact something in a computer environment. Or when somebody relaxes, we can do the same thing. So for example, one of the ones that's really fun and is used as an entertainment application is you concentrate and you're able to light something on fire, which is neat because it simulates telekinesis. Or you can relax and make something like
on the computer.
Although there are some creative developers who have got propane tanks and set things up in the forest, but that's it was kind of a neat separate project of kind of the maker variety. But anyway, so people do some really interesting stuff. And then, as I said, we have the meditation algorithm where you can relax and make things float or a number of other things. So those are ways that the algorithms are used to control something. So you put yourself in a certain mental state, you see something respond. Easiest way to do it is on a computer, but also you can use microcontrollers. So we've had people who do things like a Nerf gun where it can shoot something if you concentrate above a certain level, or we actually have another student here at Stanford who did an art project where she took the two algorithms and laid it out on a whiteboard with colored markers. So depending on how focused or relaxed you are, controlled where the markers went. So it's not reading your thoughts, it's reading mental states. But you, as I was saying, you have the more active component, which is controlling something, and then you also have the passive component, which is seeing how people's minds are reacting to different things. And one of the areas that I see potential for using this technology, maybe for a project for this class, is things like maybe when someone's driving, making sure that they're paying attention. Or exposing them to different types of information and seeing, are they focusing while they're seeing this information? Or, you know, if it's relaxation related, are they relaxed? Sorry, okay. So anyway, just to kind of wrap up, we have a headset that's coming out in a couple of months that is going to be compatible with both mobile devices and PC and Mac. And if you're interested in exploring some of the things that you can do with our technology, you would have access to one of the prototype headsets, which is this one, that I think will be interesting because you can do it with mobile devices, which has a lot more sensor input. And then also you'll be able to work with our engineering team, and of course we would feature it on our website and things like that. So.
Thank you.
Oh. I always try to run away with this.
Okay, the next project is from Henry Evans, who emailed me, said he couldn't be here today. He has two projects. He's a fellow locally who's a quadriplegic, and he actually works at Lowell Garage, and we'll see him at Lowell Garage on our tour. But he had two project ideas. The first one is a improved scoop hole, and I'll show you what that is. Another one is really interesting. A design for a wireless treat dispenser for service animals. So the scoop bowl is this kind of a bowl here where one side is raised, and the idea is that a person who has limited mobility can be able to feed himself, and sort of, instead of pushing the food out of a plate, you can push it up the side of the bowl, and that, you know, contains the food better. He was having some problems himself with the scoop bowl that he has, and he was going to demonstrate that, but he isn't able to be here today. So this is a project that you may want to look at. The second project is a dog treat dispenser for wheelchair users who have service animals. And a service animal can not only be a dog, but I have a colleague at the VA who has a service monkey. And so he has agreed to participate, you know, with a student team that wants to work, might want to work on this. So Henry's challenge was to come up with a dispenser that mounts on the wheelchair, but it could maybe mount on, it can be external to a wheelchair, that's an option, that could be operated by voice or EMG, and here's a little EMG thing that was commercially available, or laser mounted on the glasses, and here's Henry with his laser pointer over here, and he has this Dynavox communication device that he uses, and apparently there's a way to transmit signals from this to operate things. But, you know, some other mechanism that doesn't require the use of his hands because his hands don't work. So those are his two projects. Next is Jennifer, who will talk about, it's Marta, who will talk about a few projects.
My name is Marta Zanchi, and I graduated from Stanford University with my PhD in electrical engineering just 2 years ago. And I'm now the founder and solo entrepreneur at Medinovo. And what I am very fortunate to be doing is working at the edge of medical technology innovations. Think about healthcare delivery, not today, but what it will look like 20 years ago, and helping other entrepreneurs in medical technologies delivering their solutions, and working the business plan, navigating the FDA regulatory landscape, and sorting out the details of the technology and so forth. And, well, a big part of the picture of healthcare in 10 years from now is what is today the biggest and fastest growing population, segment of the American population, is the elderly people. By now, we have 40 million elderly people, and in 10 years, it will be twice as much the size as it is today. And not only that, but the average age of the elderly population is continuous increase. This is great. We're living longer lives, and this is beautiful, but we are in no way prepared to accommodate for this growth, especially because the whole U.S. healthcare system is not prepared to accommodate all these people. There are not enough nursing homes, and frankly, who wants to be in one? So why not create tools, services, anything that can help our growing elderly population live comfortably at home, network, be with friends, even when they can't move, and helping them move as much as they can. And so the three projects I want to talk about touch on these very important issues. Considering the growing elderly population, how can we help them live longer, independent lives in their home and moving around? Think about, for example, the virtual community project. There are many tools that we can use, Facebook, laptop, iPods, and to connect with other friends and so forth. But as we grow older, it's harder and harder to use these tools. Tiny little buttons to push on your iPod in order to use Facebook. Interfaces that are really not working well with someone who maybe has a tremor disease or something. And I'm a strong believer that those are the tools of the future to continue growing our expanded network and live a more fulfilling life, even intellectually. Play games with people who are not close, and maybe with family as well, who lives on the other side of America. So why not developing this tool that can help them have a virtual network of friends with whom he can play, talk, Skype, who knows. And it's a mix of hardware and software. It needs to be an interface that they can easily use. It needs to have also an image interface, a virtual software, something that is very intuitive, that has certain characteristics that enable them to use their fingers up if it's a virtual touchpad or something. So there is both a hardware component, a software component, and why not thinking also about the psychology of using these games? You know, playing with Angry Birds may be fine if you are on average 30 years old, but if you're 80, maybe you're looking at another type of games. Maybe some games that also have a utility to help these people maintain their cognitive abilities longer. So, and there is also the opportunity to add some medical touch to it. Why not adding an accelerometer to this handheld device so that, I'm very nervous, but, you know, think about an elderly person who maybe over the months start trembling more and more. And maybe that's a sign of the development of some kind of neurological disorder. And this game that he has is actually starting to fulfill a medical intent for the early diagnosis of this kind of problems. And so the virtual network really has a lot of potential, and it's a, you know, white table for you to develop whatever you think is useful to keep these people engaged in the community and maybe add some elements of diagnosis to it. The other two are more mechanical maybe, but maybe. Really, once again, they are very much dependent on what you want to go with it. As you said, elderly people hopefully will be enabled to live longer lives in their homes rather than being put into nursing homes simply because there aren't enough of them right now to accommodate all this growth. So how can you enable them to take care of their own more easily? And there are many things that you can think about, really cleaning, maintaining the house, doing works. Maybe, again, there is some elements of connecting them with contractors who can do some of the work, or instead really providing tools to enable them to do this work when they cannot anymore. And then, of course, I would like my grandmother to be able to go around driving. One of her biggest problems is not that she cannot drive, but she cannot get in and out of the car. So think about some tools that can make it very easy for you to drive when you do not have enough strength to get in out of the car, to pull the brakes up, and so forth. So once again, very much open to what your creativity can allow you to do.
So this is the Customize the Wheelchair project. My name is Jennifer, and I'm the founder of a startup called SmithWorks, where our goal is to create more positive and empowering design aesthetics for wheelchair users. And so that really is the target user group here, users of manual wheelchairs, and more specifically, people who are 65 plus, because that's really driving this market. What I put together, okay.
You broke it.
I did break it. What did I do? I know the clock needs to be stopped for sure. What did I do?
Don't. Just
make
sure you
get
forward.
Yes, I. This is no reflection of my capabilities as a project partner, I promise. Okay. So here we go. This is a consumer mood board I put together that just kind of shows all this really is a collection of brands that really give you a little bit of what someone, generally speaking, if they're turning 65, they would consider these brands to be premium and good brands. And so as you tackle the design of this project, I would want you to have that top of mind in terms of, you know, being inside the head of the consumer. So what's the problem we're trying to solve here? Really, the general problem is that there is a lack of design for aesthetic preferences in this market. If you look in this blue box up here, these are words that people use to describe wheelchairs when I conducted focus groups with them. I mean, they're fairly negative, things like institutional, like a hospital, old. And we know that those words do not match the aesthetic preferences for this consumer group. So that kind of gets to the heart of the matter. Users of wheelchairs don't really have a lot of opportunity to extend their own personal aesthetic. I mean, think of clothes, shoes, accessories. Those we can choose on a daily basis, but users of wheelchairs often, I mean, they have to wear the same equipment every day and for every different type of occasion. Just to add one other thing, I mean, when you look at other consumer product categories, I mean, they're trending very much toward individuality and customization. I mean, you can do personalized postage stamps, Kleenex boxes, designer huggies. And I mean, we really are not seeing the same amount of innovation in mobility aids and wheelchairs. So here's the project. The aim is to explore ways to add a personal aesthetic to wheelchairs. And here are the specs. These are in the project brief, but no altering or permanent damage to the wheelchair structure. You want this, whatever the design is, to be able to be easily changed and cleaned by the user. It needs to work on a number of wheelchairs that are covered by insurance and Medicare. Consider different user personas and design aesthetics, so male, female, etc. Consider different usage occasions, so outdoor versus in the home, party. Is that the... Yeah. Oh, okay, gotcha. And then finally, you really have a lot of carte blanche to consider different fabrics, metal finishes, patterns, color, text elements. I mean, almost anything goes. The most general design suggestion I have is to think of some sort of kit that would transform the look and feel of a wheelchair to cleaner and more modern lines. And then finally, in terms of the skills I'm looking for on the project, the ideal team would have mechanical engineering, industrial design and engineering, and even textile and fabric engineering as a plus. For me, I do have a business background and a proud Stanford grad and went to business school here as well. I also have a lot of passion for this because I have a disability myself that impacts my mobility, so I'm not quite the target consumer here, but I can be somewhat in the head of the consumer for you. So that's it. I hope I can talk to you after class. Thank you.
I should mention that there is some kids in wheelchairs just off campus who would be interested in this as well, and veterans at the VA would be another population that I've already identified people that are willing to participate in the project. So consider that. Now we were thinking about calling that project "Pimp Out My Wheelchair," but we didn't think it'd be good to put it on the website, but I think that's the essence of what we're trying to do here. Okay, next up is Fernanda. Yeah, got the video.
Okay, I'll just move on to this.
Do it over here.
Maybe over here. Better your fingers than my fingers.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and show the video first,
okay.
And then I can expound from that. Can everybody see? Okay. Maybe we could play it twice just to get a double impact. Can we hit it one more time,
yeah.
Just so we can see it in full screen, please? Now she's going about in a speed of about 30 knots.
Okay.
Right. My name is Fernanda Costello, and I'm a member of the Bay Area Association of Disabled Sailors. And our playground is right there in McCovey Cove, Pier 40 in San Francisco. And what I'm so enthusiastic about this particular design is the fact that we need a good design for seating in order to perform recreationally, competitively, and therapeutically. I'm out on the bay at least twice a month. And these are single craft dinghies, and they're so designed that you cannot capsize it. It's got a centerboard, and it's got double keel in the back. And some of the ladies, as you have seen in the video, Kathy Pugh is a complete quad. And she steers that dinghy out of a servo. But the problem is the fact that the seat that she sits on does not allow her to regain back to center. And this has also been my experience while I'm sailing the dinghy. We can't capsize the boat, but we can certainly take it on its heel. And when I'm on that heel, I want to be part of that sail. I want to be part of that wind, and I want to be able to feel part of all those wakes that we can feel. Because that becomes the effect of therapeutic sake when it comes to building my core muscles. So it's not just about for leisurely or recreationally. There is also 75 of these dinghy boats that are built all over the world. And believe it or not, we have 3 members in our club that has participated in international regattas, which has taken them to Australia, Canada, and we're hoping that in 2013, after the America's Cup, that we will bring the international regatta of 75 sailors into the bay. And this is all going to be accommodating different disabilities. We have visually impaired individuals that are actually sailing the dinghies. We have tetraplegics. I myself am quadriplegic, and also paraplegic. But the best part about this is that when we arrive on the dock and let go of ourselves from these wheelchairs, we're not afraid of water. We're out there to have a great time. We're also out there to challenge the fact that the elements are not so controlled by us, but to be able to flow along with it. And the camaraderie of the group is not only enthusiastic, but they're also willing to push and see what kind of creativity comes upon us, because we want to compete in the international regattas, not just domestically. And so before you make up your decision, I invite you to join me this Saturday, 12 noon, at the dock, so I can place you on the chase boat, and so you can actually get to experience what all the different abilities of sailors we have. And we are certainly looking to upgrade the design of our seats. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Tracy?
To do. I'm a speech pathologist, and I work with Parkinson's patients. There are many, many, many Parkinson's patients in this country and across the world, and they have a variety of communication problems that isolate them from community and from conversation and from interaction, from socializing. Primarily something called hypophonia, which means that their vocal cords become bowed and weak, and then they are no longer able to generate a clear, strong, loud voice. So you can't hear them very well, even if you're right next to them. And it's unfortunate because for the vast majority, cognitively, they are together. They know what they want to say. They may be a little bit slow, can't initiate the speech, but even when they do initiate the speech, the voice, the volume isn't there. So what I want to do is design a voice-activated feedback system that provides a little bit of information to them, because the disease takes that from them. They no longer have the ability to really monitor what their vocal volume is or be able to do anything about it. So I want a voice-activated background noise. It could be a white noise. It could be a restaurant din, anything that would be, you know, characteristic of a normal, natural environment. And the reason I want that is because when we play that into the ear, an individual will automatically increase their vocal volume to be heard over that noise. And so that would be ideal. I'd also like to have a feedback available visual, auditory, kinesthetic that allows us to set thresholds, us being the clinicians. But, you know, at best, if we could at least begin with iPhone, iPad application that just presents this noise whenever they are attempting to voice, that if we could get that far, that would be great. We need a laryngeal mic. The laryngeal mic sits against the larynx, and it will pick up their vocalization. So it picks up activation of the vibration of the vocal cords, sends that information to the device, so that then it activates the background noise. This is getting a little fancy, but I would like a wish list, a respiratory band that then would monitor abdominal rib cage activity. So I'm looking at motor action potential, perhaps, again, biofeedback. I want these folks to be able to generate greater vocal volume with greater abdominal musculature and strength. So the masking modes could be ambient background noise, white noise, environmental noise, and I would like for it to be computer interfaced so that it sends information to the speech pathologist computer at the clinic, and we can generate reports, and we can also change thresholds or help them with their display format. Okay, is that clear, I hope? Good. Thank you. This is just another option of how you might be able to activate some of the displays. And that's it. So, Dave,
thank you, Tracy.
Dave has my information if you're interested and can help. Get that out of there. Please let me know. Lots of folks to help.
Okay. Oh, my phone is going to be...
So I'm here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely. On behalf of Rota, four projects that we have the possibility of collaborating with you on. We're focused on how hard it is to propel wheelchairs, how painful it is, and what happens later in your life when you're relegated to a power chair. We found that rowing is used in a lot of rehab places as a beneficial workout, so we went ahead and implemented that in wheelchairs. They use the rowing propulsion. That's what they look like in real life. Last year, we did a power assist right into the front of Rotrike. The vehicles that we were shipping can now be integrated with this product. That was students from last year. So Rochair, Rotrike, what's next? We want to have a family of products. This is where I worked before Rota. Roscooter is next. So we're going to be prototyping this starting February, so you can get right in on influencing the design thereafter. We also have some wheel sets that we're doing that feature a locking mechanism that's far better than those scissor brakes that you have that grab the tire. This is actual thrusting pins into the axle and locking it securely. We want this to be something that you order off Amazon and you can put on your own chair. Really easy to install. We're also working on a very sophisticated transmission for our vehicles. We have users that are stroke victims with only one arm, but then we have athletes who are paraplegics and quadriplegics who are stronger than you could ever imagine. So you need a really robust gearbox. This is a gearbox that is going to have no discrete gears, so it won't be in a position where you can break it. It's also something that is going to automatically shift. So for those users that are propelling with one hand, the vehicle is already shifting for them when they get to a hill. We're also working on a lift. This is just a concept in terms of the picture there. We want you to influence the design. But those are the four projects that we have going on right now that we can share with you. Stanford's up there. We're in Los Gatos. You can see Lexington Reservoir going over to Santa Cruz. We're only 30 minutes away. You're welcome to see these vehicles being produced. We use Dropbox to send files back and forth, but we come up here all the time. And then all the designs you can see on SolidWorks and have them on your computer. We've got a few team members here. I'm Michael. And the website you can see, and that's the URL.
Present for your father.
Okay.
There's a bag to
That's a
carry.
Lot to drink now.
Aubrey, if you could come down. Come on down.
All right, cool. So, my name's Aubrey, and thanks for listening to me. Well, I guess I shouldn't thank you yet, because I don't know if you will. But I am looking for someone who can help me design something to shield me from the rain. So, it's winter, it'll be spring, and it'll rain a lot, and I don't currently have a good system for staying dry. I have ponchos, but it's very hard for me to put it over my head or to cover the rest of my skimmer. Or if I use a poncho, then it makes it hard to transfer it to a normal chair during class. So right now, I just have an umbrella. And this is the kind of umbrella that if you press a button, it'll open. All right. Well, what do I do now? It'll close, but it doesn't know that. All right, so. It's too hard for me to close. That's my project. I live on campus, so it'll be really easy to work together on this, I think. And, I can't give you a video camera or anything, but, it'd be really helpful.
Nicole, you're up next. Are you going to be coming up here?
Of course.
Okay. I have put this in your pocket. And, okay. You're on.
My name is Nicole Tortellini. I'm a Stanford senior majoring in computer science. My project will help people who are blind. The problem that my project addresses is that many of the eateries on campus do not have Braille or online menus. Those eateries that do have online menus often use sophisticated web designs and PDF files that are not accessible to screen readers and electronic braille note takers. PDF files are often completely inaccessible, or they are formatted in such a way that all of the words run together, or there is only one word per line. The prototype of my project will provide users access to an online database of Stanford eatery menus via an accessible website designed specifically for use with screen readers and electronic braille note takers. The prototype will consist mainly of the database and the website through which to access it. The prototype will allow users to search for an eatery by its name or to look at eatery names in an alphabetical order. And I am looking for assistance first and foremost in planning and transcribing the menus, and then second in critiquing the visual appearance of the website. Please let me know if you are interested.
Thank you. Okay, next we have Don.
Getting a medal. This is the advance, right?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Don Frank. I'm a retired IBMer, and Rosanna, I've met by helping in her department. I play Santa Claus. I've done it for the last few years. And also my daughter works in the physics department. First of all, since the beginning of time, the cane has been quite useful. Here it's used, and over time it's continued to be used and used. But the unfortunate thing is, well, let me go back. Through engineering curiosity and some of you people in this staff, your class, look how we've grown in all these areas, from the Da Vinci model to the 747 to the abacus to the computer. But our friend the cane has stayed pretty much the same. There's been some personal conveniences, a gun sword for the cane, brandy capsules, which means you have to use a cane even more, and then multiple feet. But why am I here? Well, I'm a friendly cane user. Since 2007, I've had knee replacement surgery, I've had spine surgery, and this has been my friend, but I don't need him anymore. But some of the things I ran into, entering and exiting cars, airplanes, and theaters or church rows, the cane, well, stabbing some people in the feet or hitting their carry-ons, very, very difficult. Just show some samples. Next thing is limited use in different scenarios. It's difficult to hand out candy canes one-handed in presents when I'm playing Santa Claus. And storing the cane went on a trip hazard. It's a trip hazard to people as they rush to get a drink at a game. You know, if you got it sticking out like this, you can trip them. Difficulty in accomplishing required and special tasks. Like most buildings are user-friendly, and not all fun rides can be used by everyone. And during a pool class, which I teach, I've taught for the last 12 years how to play billiards, it's very difficult. Where do I put the cane when I want to instruct the student? In fact, sometimes I actually shoot with a cane. But there are some restrooms. There's no place. Where do you hang the cane when you're using a device? Carnival rides are just about what do you do with this thing? And then pools, difficulty there. Subtle environmental hazards are uneven surfaces, potholes, wet floors, stairs. I've often thought if you just had a light at the bottom of your cane and you could hit a switch and you could see things out in front of you. So here we are. Am I close? It's the little thing I made up. We want a stout design cane to the tune of stout-hearted men. It says, give us a cane, a stout-hearted cane designed by students of Stanford Engineering School. Start by considering a material that's strong yet so light, with functions easy to use and in all conditions, both by day and night. Start with today's cane, the basic standard cane. Consider pitfalls of everyday use to make it better. Shoulder to shoulder, consider everything bolder and bolder. Brainstorm, conceptualize, let your design ideas roam free. Cane users throughout the world would forever be in your debt. Your newly designed cane would be Nobel worthy, we bet. So that's why we're here.
Thank you. I've done that. Yeah. Thanks, Don. And a weapon. So here's Don. Here's Don's last slide. Next project is from Liz Hamill, who couldn't be here. She's sick. But she wants a lightweight, portable, adjustable seat for herself because she experiences chronic pain and lower back pain. So if you're interested in that, you can read more about it in the project handout, and you're certainly welcome to contact her about this project. Yes?
This has a website called Travels with Pain.
Okay.
Just to give you some good background.
Travels with Pain. Okay, great. Yeah, she's an author of that. I think I have a web link to that on the website. Okay. So next is Zach and Darcy. Come on down. Hi, Zach. Good to meet you.
So my name is Zach. Zach Wentz. I'm a senior at Menlo Atherton High School in Atherton. And my whole life I've played the piano. And 3 years ago I was paralyzed by a blood clot to my spine. T1, which is the first thoracic vertebrae, complete injury. And I still play the piano, except now I have a challenge, which is using the pedal. Obviously I can't use my feet. So I've tried a bunch of different things. I've tried, like, resting my elbow on it while playing, like this, but then that just got too hard because, like, I don't have any core muscles, so it's hard to keep myself up. I've tried everything, and so I was just wondering if anyone's interested in this project to help design, not only for me, but for many other people in this kind of situation, an accessible pedal, I don't know, maybe mouth or just any other way, but obviously they can't be used by the feet. So I'm just going to, real quick, play something with the pedal and without, just so you can hear the difference. And I think this should work. Yeah. So I have something recorded that I'll play back that was, my mom held me. She held the pedal earlier at home. And so what I'm going to play right here is with the pedal that she helped me with. And then I'll play something without the pedal. So actually I'll play without the pedal first. Whoa, this is hard. Bear with me here. That's good, I got it. That's fine. All right. Like using the pedal, and you'll probably be able to hear the difference. Ultimately be able to play using the pedal with some other part of my body so that I can, I don't know, yeah. And I live less than 5 minutes away from here, so if you're interested, I'll be here at the end of class, and you can come talk to me, and yeah, I can answer any questions. Thank you.
Gary?
Thanks. Oh, okay, good. Thanks. Good morning. My name is Gary Burke. I'm an ortho faculty here.
and I'm a prosthetist. I design and fit artificial limbs. And this project came actually from Sandy, who had 53, had traumatic loss of both hands below the elbow. And currently, he's wearing prostheses that allow him to participate in his activities of daily living with really without an issue. He's able to accomplish virtually everything throughout the day. He's able to feed himself. He's able to make his own food, drive, do everything that he needs to do, save for a couple of different activities. One of those is showering, which seems sort of obvious, except you can't get a prosthesis wet. So how do you wash your hair? How do you wash your backside? How do you keep clean, use a washcloth if you have nothing to grab a washcloth with? So this project really addresses those with bilateral upper extremity impairment, whether it's amputation, even a higher level, such as this gentleman, where you can't toilet, you can't wash yourself in the shower. The criterion for this project is really quite simple. You need a hands-free attachment for the shower. It needs to be waterproof. It needs to be durable. It needs to be inexpensive. Pretty much the sky's the limit. It can attach to the body. It can attach to the furniture. It can attach to a separate item. But it seems so simple that, but yet there's nothing out there. So the opportunity to do something that has a nice effect on this community is there, and the limitations or the opportunities are endless in terms of the creativity. So I'll be around afterwards. If you have any thoughts, questions, concerns, we're here. Thank you.
Okay. Right. I don't think Jan Clements is here. She's with the Sunrise of Palo Alto Assistive Living Center for seniors, and there was a bunch of projects that that she suggested, and you can check those out on the handout or on the website. But at this time, I think we'll move forward with our next presenter, which is Jack.
So, a rhetorical question. What if an astronomer saw a huge meteor on a trajectory to hit the Earth? Is that a crisis, or is it only a crisis if when the meteor hits? If you didn't know it was going to, or if you decided, well, there's nothing I could do about it or someone else would take care of it, is it still a crisis? So the aging population is going to have this huge effect on the U.S., and whether you consider it a crisis today because we can see it coming, or in, let's say, 2021, when it will affect every single one of you through people you know or yourself. So in 2021, there will be still about 130 million housing units in the U.S. Roughly a third will be unusable. Someone you know, maybe you, you'll have something wrong with you, you won't feel good. You say, I should go to the doctor. It'll be 3 months before you can get an appointment. And even then, it's not clear what will happen after that appointment. So the world is going to change. So Marta talked a little about it. We're sort of on the same mission. We are looking at this, what's going to happen for real in 2021, and what is already we know is going to happen because we can see it coming. So the first one, let's see what I've got here. A flat house. So most of you live in houses that have stairs. Something like a quarter of the aging population can't go up 10 steps of stairs. I live in a flat house, except we don't have stairs. That's 7 3/4 inches and some number of stairs. But we have a step down from the dining room to the living room. My wife's mother in her wheelchair, this is a huge thing. Going out? Yeah, out in the front gate. The step. another step out by the side of the house. Two steps going into the front of the house. So people have put in elevators, but that's only a small portion. So the problem is, how will we make housing usable for people where there are steps in the houses where the houses aren't flat? Second problem, which actually Dave had suggested was a good place to start, as were Marta's, is that seniors, elderly, it's not really good to use an age category, but that's where all the data is. They have difficulty bending over. They have difficulty reaching very far over their head. They have balance problems. And so the problem of cleaning the shower, the bathtub around the toilet, these are huge problems, and they're not going to get done. So we're going to have some large number of people you know, living in houses that are unsafe and unhealthy. So that's what the projects are. Some data you have, I think.
Okay, Gerardo.
All right, great. Thanks, Dave. I'm Gerardo Capiel. I'm the VP of Engineering at Benetech, and Benetech is a nonprofit 501c3 software company just not far away, less than a mile away, that develops software in three program areas, but I'm here to talk about our literacy program area and some potential projects for you guys. Most of these, all these projects are actually software-based projects, so a little bit different than most of the things that we've seen. So the first project, let me talk about three of them, which are meant to address the issue of the accessibility of books with images, particularly textbooks. So we have a project going on right now as part of what we call the Diagram Center, where we're building an open source application called Poet for adding image descriptions to images in textbooks and other types of books. And in this process, people are actually typing in descriptions, but who the right person to type in a description is a tricky problem. So the first project is to actually be able to classify what is the image about. Is it a formula, because they actually put in a formula as an image? Is it a bar chart? Is it a parabola? Is it a photograph? What is it? And then based on that, we can decide how important it is to describe that image, and also what type of person should categorize that image. Should it be a math educator or someone proficient in math, or can it be someone that's not as proficient in math? So that's one project. Second project, and that's just identifying software that can do that, that can classify images. And there's a lot of open source solutions that might be available to be used here. Second project is essentially, so once we've done a description, there's a lot of other books that have pretty much the same image, and we could leverage that description that already someone has spent the time to create. And so it's actually kind of a search engine to go, when we're looking at an image, to go look for all the other images that have been described in our database and find an image that's similar, that has a description already with it, display that to the user creating the images and figure out whether that fits. I'm going to jump to the fourth project because it's pretty related here, this graphing calculator. So sometimes there's also, let's say it's a parabola. Well, it's something that can, with a graphing calculator, you could create a replica of that image. And the idea here is to create it in an SVG format so that it can be printed on what's called a tactile printer that allows someone, a blind user, to be able to feel what the shape of the parabola and also hear a description about it. So that's the third kind of related project. In general, going to this PDF to RTF conversion, a challenge for us in terms of providing accessible textbooks is that a lot of the textbooks that we get come in PDF format, which is actually hard for us to put into assistive technology devices that read the book or turn the book or make the book available on a refreshable Braille display, which is something that Nicole, for example, uses so that you can actually, it's an electronic Braille display. So we need, there's a tool out there for going from PDF to RTF, and we need a team to kind of evaluate how to best use that tool and help us understand whether it's what we need to do to make it work or if it's even going to work. So those are the first four projects. The next project here is we have an open source application also for moving to a different type of set of disabilities for people to learn to read that have cognitive disabilities and are in their adolescent or adult years, haven't learned to read yet, but have another adult who knows how to read who wants to help them learn how to read. Well, this software actually introduces a pedagogy for how to teach this person to read and has a lot of very simple sample content that they can use to teach that. And what we want to do is make that application more switch-friendly so that the person that has the disability can navigate the content more easily. And then the final project here is we, once those books are made into an accessible format, we have an application that we've developed for Android that allows you to listen to the book, and it would be listening to those descriptions as well. And that application is meant today works with Android's screen reader that's built into Android, but that screen reader is not exactly been optimized for switch use, and so we're looking for someone to work on essentially making that application more switch-friendly from a user interface perspective. And just, I really wanted to quickly kind of, there's a whole bunch, a few Benetech people here, and if you could raise your hands, these are people that you can ask questions about any of these projects, and I think that's it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Thank you.
I just have one more project to talk about, and then we'll get out of here. This is a project that Deborah Davis submitted from Florida, and she couldn't be here, so she did a video for us.
So a lot of people won't have this break. And now I've just put her here.
And but what happens is when Marcy goes crazy and goes running, she goes up and locks my brake. So I'm wheeling along, and all of a sudden the brake stops, and I almost slide on my chair because she is strong enough to lock that brake. The other problem that happens is with the brake is that it gets caught all down in here and gets stuck underneath, and I can't unhook it or break it or go anywhere. And as you can see, I've ripped the shreds of it trying to get the thing unhooked from the brake. So for now, I'm going to show you this way, because this, you can actually do it this way, and this is how I do it all the time. But what we need to come up with is some way of getting something, and I was thinking maybe we could hook something here, but it has to be low enough. You know, really, it doesn't work to hook it here, because it doesn't fit, and not everybody even has these, and it doesn't work. And if she crosses over me, go this way, Rexy, please! You're all caught up, and you rip shreds, and you get radio burn from the thing. You don't want that. So, here, okay. Okay, so for now, we're going to hook it here, and you're going to see us walk right off.
That's great. I mentioned software projects at Project Possibility. You can check that out. Other projects, if you have an idea for a project, you can convince me how good it is. We can work on that. There's lots of other ones that are around, and certainly other people have worked on projects before. Tuesday, Gail Curtis will be joining us and talking about design thinking and innovation for assistive technologies. And Saki was, oh, there you are. I'd like to introduce one of our resource people. I want to thank all the presenters for being here, and thank you so much for coming up with great ideas. I want to remind the students to sign in today, and please stick around and meet up with some of the people that presented stuff. Gail, do you have...
Can I say one thing?
Yes, you may.
So for people coming next...
Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tuesday, we're going to focus actually in class a lot on, like, picking the project and how are you going to get started with the project and forming teams, and we have a lot of in-class work on the stuff. So I would like to suggest, if you don't have, I mean, there's so many great projects here. I mean, it's like, you know, how are you going to choose? So, like, come in with, like, a little short list of, you know.
Maybe top three.
Top three projects that you like. And the main thing that I will be working on the class is not what are the good ideas about the projects, but what are the questions you want to be asking about, right? The dog, you know, dog leash. Well, if you pick on that, okay, what are the questions do you want to ask that person or somebody else person to find out? Because the first thing you want to do is find out more about, you know, the people that are going to use these things. And then, you know, at the same time, you'll naturally be having design ideas. So that's what we'll be doing next time.
Okay, great. And if you can list your top three ideas and send them all to me, I'll post them to everybody so maybe we can get some matches going between now and Tuesday. Please stick around for a while and talk to some of these presenters. And I see Greg there has some interesting things that he's dying to show people. So thank you again for staying a little bit later than usual. Yes, thank you.